Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 10th. I'm Ray Graff. It's birds today. Julie Hart is back to share birding knowledge with you and answer your questions. If you do have a question about birds, and people have been emailing since yesterday morning, so I think some people have questions about birds, you can call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Oh, I was up taking the air on the roof of the radio station earlier, and the birds are having some fun today. It's beautiful out. Number again is 800-348-2551. Julie Hart and your birding questions coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We discuss birds every month on this program, and today is the day. We welcome Julie Hart. Julie is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behavior. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. Rich Guthrie, he's a traveling man, and he's somewhere out of connection for the cellular. I don't know where he is. It's an undisclosed location, but Rich won't be with us today. It's a solo shot for Julie Hart. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And Julie Hart, I have about 10 emails that have come in since yesterday morning.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
It's bird time.
It is. Everything is happening. Birds are on the move. Birds are starting to get ready for breeding. Some are already on their nest. Like, it is that time.
After such a cold and nasty stretch of several weeks, 7 weeks or whatever, it was like a switch was fired on the weekend, and then suddenly the birds, there was a cacophony of birds. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite times of year.
We had a hawk in our neighborhood who's stuck around for at least 3 days that we could see.
Yeah.
Now, we think it was a red-tailed hawk, but it might have been a sharp shin. I don't know exactly. He kept having his back to us, and it was way up in the trees, and then he finally swooped by at one point. But I was not in a position to really get a good identification on him. Will he stay in the area?
Yes, most likely. The red-tailed hawks are busy right now, pairing up, starting to do some courtship displays. So that's when you'll see two of them flying really close together, kind of paralleling, mimicking each other's flight. And they'll start building their nests and everything. Yeah, so I would keep an eye out. They like to be in the really high up in the top of the trees nesting. Yeah.
And the crows were kind of, it was funny. He was up there and the crows were about 15 feet away just watching. And he didn't care at all. I mean, he just didn't care.
I think the crows will. The crows are they're starting to get it, you know, the itch.
Yeah.
But they're maybe not quite there yet. Ravens are already on their nests.
Yeah.
We have some on the rail trail here in town that nested last year under the bridge, and they're already on their nest again. But crows are a little bit later, but probably by the end of the month, they'll be nesting as well.
And I believe on Sunday morning, beautiful, beautiful morning, I think I heard a woodpecker doing his courtship.
Drumming.
Not looking for food, but banging as loud as he could.
Yes. All the drumming. We've got lots of things singing. I've been seeing cardinals feeding each other, which is part of their courtship.
Yeah.
The mourning doves, the males are going around doing the little chase after all the females. Yeah, it's just like so exciting
right
now.
This is a great time of year.
It's great.
All right, let's dispatch a few emails before the first break, and then we'll hit the phones after that. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. It's birding today with Julie Hart, and this one is from James. For the last two mornings, and this was written late February, the bluebirds have been scouting out the box in my yard, which they used last April through August. Unfortunately, they could not enter because I have the entrance blocked to deter a sparrow, which has been scouting it out for the last few weeks. Should I keep it blocked for another week, risking that the Blues may lose interest? And again, this was from February 27th.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I'm assuming it's a house sparrow that's trying to nest in there, which they do. And then, I mean, both the house sparrows and the bluebirds will re-nest multiple times. They'll have multiple broods throughout the year. So I think it would be safe to try to leave it blocked for a little bit to try to deter that house sparrow. And then hopefully the bluebirds will move in. And if they don't move in right away, hopefully they'll move in for their second brood.
All right. James goes on. I have a second bluebird box 10 to 12 feet away to which I'm hoping to attract tree swallows.
Mm.
I have the entrance blocked in an effort to deter the house sparrows from claiming it before the swallows arrive. Timing is my concern as to when I should unblock the entrance. Any advice is appreciated.
I mean, I would just keep an eye out for when you start to see the swallows flying around, which should be relatively soon. I think the Phoebes are just south of us. I haven't actually looked recently to see where the tree swallows are, but like you can go on eBird.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can go online on eBird and you can like search for a species and you can see where they are. So you can start tracking. You can already start tracking hummingbirds moving up north from the south. So
how accurate
is this? It's
pretty
cool. I mean, it's extremely accurate because it's, you know, it's what people have been observing and submitting their observations. And so it's all real time. So you can see from one day to the next how much things have moved.
How many people are actually involved with eBird? So in other words, if only four or five people are giving you data, it's not going to be worth much.
No, it's millions.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think there's like at least 50,000 in New York State.
Oh, so you can really track.
Yeah, like it's really precise.
How cool is that?
It's great, yeah.
Katie in Boston Lake writes, for the past week, a pair of pileated woodpeckers has been visiting a tree in my backyard, often for hours at a time, probably to feed. The holes they are creating are 3 to 4 feet off the ground and oval-shaped. If two pileated or pileated, whatever, woodpeckers feed together, is it likely they are a mated pair?
Yes, probably. This time of year, the young will be dispersed, and the adults should be paired up and getting ready to, they should be getting ready to start building their nest holes right now, too.
Okay, so Katie goes on, if they are a mated pair, is the nest likely to be nearby, and how could I go about looking for it?
It probably is going to be nearby. They usually, you know, have their territories, and if they're foraging, they're probably going to try to nest nearby. They're going to be a round hole. They're pretty big. I'm trying to think.
They live in the tree?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll build a cavity. It'll be a big hole. Like, I mean, if you imagine like a squirrel head. It's probably like that size, like a gray squirrel's head. So it would be around that size. So they're pretty, because they're really big birds. So they make some of the biggest holes, biggest cavities around.
Gotcha. So. Jeffrey writes in, I live in Coxsackie. Okay, this will tie into your eBird discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey writes, I live in Coxsackie and have yet to see a robin. Where are they?
They are around. I've been seeing some. They should start coming back in big numbers anytime now.
Okay.
But there are some around already, too.
And again, you can track these at eBird.
You can track them on eBird. There's also another website that the Cornell Lab has available that predicts, it tells you how many birds are migrating, and it predicts which species have moved. So it's another way to see how many birds have moved over your particular location.
How do they do that? Is it AI?
No, it is using BirdCast. There we go. That's the name of it.
BirdCast.
No, they use radar like you would use for like airplanes or weather. And you can tell based on the signal that they're seeing in the radar what's birds or insects versus the weather, like a rain or something.
Cool.
And so they can use that to predict how many birds are moving and how high and how fast. And Yeah.
How do you bird watchers do it before technology, huh?
Yeah, really. I don't know.
Bill in Clifton Park writes, we have two bluebird boxes in our backyard, both of which were well used last year. It was amazing to see them nest, raise young, and then fledge. Last couple weeks, there has been increasing activity, at least two bluebird couples, perhaps even three or four couples flying in and out of the boxes and in the bushes and trees nearby. But last week, we noticed a couple of house sparrows occupying one of the birdhouses. We could see the bluebirds attempting to chase them away, but they haven't been successful, and it looks like the house sparrows seem to have taken full possession of one of the boxes. Is there anything we can do to roust the house sparrows from the box?
I mean, one of the recommended things to do is to keep destroying their nest. Don't let them, you know, lay eggs. Just
but if they're in the house, though.
Yeah, so you can, bluebird boxes are designed so you can quickly open them and peek in to see, keep track of how they're coming along. So I would, if you know it's house sparrow, I would go in and I would take that nesting material out every single day until they leave and find somewhere else to nest.
They're so annoying.
They are. The other thing to do is to make sure, and I don't remember exactly what the diameter is, but most likely they've got the correct diameter for the opening, you know, small enough to preclude some of the larger birds, but big enough for the bluebirds to get in.
I'm sure there's a science to that, too. You can get
there is, but, you know, it's house sparrows, man. They are.
I know.
They're tenacious.
I know.
Yeah.
All right. Linda writes in, and then we'll take a break. I'm not sure there's a question here. Every winter, the blue jays peck at our house. I've tried everything. Eggshells for them. Not really a good idea, as it just attracted more. Last year, I tried spraying the places they could reach with garlic vinegar solution, which worked until it rained or snowed. This year, I moved the bird feeders many yards away from the house. They still came and picked off paint. I give up. Also, I hate blue jays. That's from Linda. So there's no question there, but I... You know, if you want to comment for the next 15 seconds, go ahead.
Blue jays are pretty, they're kind of bullies.
Yeah, they're fun,
I love
though.
Them. They make really cool sounds. They're beautiful. But yeah, they are kind of bullies.
Let's take a break here. It's Birding with Julie Hart today. 800-348-2551 is the number. And we'll check the phones in a moment. John Scofield, Willa Jean, that song, it just speaks to me. I don't know why. The number here is 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart. And before we hit the phones, go ahead.
Yeah, before we go to the phones, I just wanted to put out a little announcement. As we've been talking about, all the bluebirds are coming back.
Yeah.
It is time to make sure that you've cleaned all of your birdhouses, removed all the debris from the winter from last summer. And then also it's a good time to include as part of your spring cleaning all of your feeders as well, and making sure that you're using a diluted bleach solution to really get rid of any diseases.
So conjunctivitis isn't a thing again this year.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So while we're on the topic of feeders, you know, I don't know when the bears are coming out, but when do you have to worry about that?
I think, obviously it changes from year to year with the weather, and it's very unseasonably warm right now. Generally, the recommendation is like in around April to take your feeders down if you're, yeah.
Okay.
If that's a concern.
If you put them very, very high, is it okay? Or
they're very tall when they stand on their legs, and they will reach up in order to get feeders. It's possible, I guess. They can also climb trees, right? So
yeah.
I think one of the things that I do during the summer is we only put our feeders out during the day. We bring them inside at night.
Uh-huh.
And so it's because the bears are mostly active at night. And so that way we can still enjoy the birds, but not be attracting bears.
And bears want no part of the nests or the boxes?
No.
No? So they're okay?
Yeah.
All the time. Yep. Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Julie Hart today, and it's birds. And let's start with Carrie in Plainfield. Carrie, you're on.
Okay. Hello, Julie. I have a question about red poles. Mm. Now, I believe they summer in Canada. And years ago, I would probably have a dozen or so every day in the winter months, okay?
Yeah.
They would migrate. I live in the Berkshires. And so they'd migrate from Canada, and I'd have them here. And I really enjoy those birds. You know, they're beautiful looking. And
yeah.
But that was years ago. I haven't seen a red pole in probably 8 years now. Now, I know we've had, you know, we've had pretty mild winters except for this winter for probably eight years at least. So maybe that's the reason that I haven't been seeing them. Is that possible?
That is possible. The other thing that it depends on is how much food there is for them in Canada still, you know, depending. So, you know, we're talking red poles, we're talking pine siskins, crossbills, all of those kind of winter eruptors is what we call them, erupting species. They will only come down if they have to, basically. So if
they've probably had mild winters up in Canada, them too, when we were having them. So
right.
You're right. They probably had enough to eat there and they didn't take the trip.
Yeah. And this year was supposed to be a really good winter finch year.
La Nina, right?
There's a winter finch forecast that comes out every year in the fall, kind of predicting based on the trees and how much seeds and cones there are on all the trees and trying to predict where there's going to be food shortages and where they'll move down, which species will move down. So, you know, I had hopes that this year was going to be really good, like with, you know, evening grosbeaks and pine grosbeaks and things like that. But it just didn't happen.
It didn't
happen this year. It's really sad. I do love those red poles as well. They're really cute.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Birds today with Julie Hart. And let's see. We'll go to Wallkill. And Philippe, you're on. Hello? Hi. You're on the air. Hello, Philippe. Hello. Goodbye. 800-348-2551. Terrenceler, it's Deb's turn. Are you there, Deb?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for being here. I had a question because I was away for 3.5 weeks taking care of a relative that was having a surgery, and I've been home for 3 days. I have multitudes of food and other things, thinking the birds are still migrating back and forth. I have nobody. Nothing is showing up in my yard. So I guess my question is, what would be the amount of time that you don't put food out that they just say, okay, we're done?
Yeah, it really depends on if any of your neighbors have feeders out as well. They may just have moved and found a new favorite feeder. But I will say that also in the last week, roughly, even before this warm spell, a lot of the birds, they were starting to not come into the feeders just because they're getting ready to breed, and they kind of feel like the days are getting longer, and they're kind of, you know, just not at the feeders as much at the moment as well. So you're kind of got a couple of things going on there. But
so I would finding alternate food sources.
Yeah, okay. I would keep the food out. I mean, make sure it, you know, stays fresh, like, you know, don't let it get too old, you know, like a week or something.
I keep it, yeah.
But I suspect that they will come back, particularly as they start to get their nest ready. So, yeah.
Okay. I do have one other question,
sure.
A weird one.
Mm.
I have, you know, you have your dryer and you have the catch. If you don't put chemicals in that, is that something safe to put out for them so they can utilize that for nesting?
I would not, just because there's probably a lot of like synthetics and cotton and all kinds of other materials in there.
A dryer?
From the dryer vent.
Oh, the dryer vent.
Washer dryer vent. Yeah.
Yep.
And And if it gets wet, you know, a lot of these birds are cup nesters, and if it gets wet, then they're just gonna, it's gonna get soggy.
Yeah.
And then the eggs won't be viable any longer.
Oh, and that won't be helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on air. I appreciate you both.
Yeah.
Thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
800-348-2551. Julie Hart is here. It's birding today. Rich Guthrie is somewhere. He didn't say where, but it's out of cellular range. So you can draw your own inferences. Let's go to East Durham. Carrie, you're on.
Hey, Ray. How you doing?
Oh, my
Carrie
gosh.
Lachlan, how are
I
you?
Know Carrie. Yeah, well, you know, you're going to be on again soon. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. I'm good. So, Julie, we have an eagle nest. Bald eagle nest, about 3 miles from my house. It's been there. I first noticed it in 2019. I don't know how long it was there before that, but they have had a successful nest every year.
Yeah.
And then this year, first we noticed a pair of adult bald eagles flying west as we were driving east from here a couple of weeks ago, and it was one of those last brutal, like, 0 days. And my husband and I were joking, oh, I'm sure they're having a lovely conversation. Who wanted to come up now? It's freezing. And then I keep checking the nest, and I've seen nothing.
Oh.
No, nobody's sitting on the nest. Nobody's standing in the tree by the nest. I haven't seen the eagles in the trees. I mean, usually you spot them.
Yeah,
and there's nothing.
Usually you do. My guess is that they have an alternative nest site, probably somewhere out of sight. They often will do that, and I know you said they've been there for like 6 years, but they will move, like, you know, into the woods somewhere and change from year to year exactly where they're nesting.
Okay.
So it could be that they're still there. They're just not in the same spot.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there on your website where you catalog nesting activity, is there a spot where you can notate no activity?
Yes. So we used eBird for the Breeding Bird Atlas, and you can submit negative data. So you could enter, let's say, zero bald eagle and say that there's a used nest, and you can add comments saying this has been an active nest in the past, but so far nobody has shown up this year. Seems to not be active anymore. So you can do that in eBird.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I am assuming they should be nesting already.
Yes. Yep. They should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if they're an experienced pair.
Well, Carrie, thanks for the call. And we will see you on Pets and Vets soon. 800-348-2551. Carrie O'Loughlin, of course, a regular on our Pets and Vets segment. And let's see.
Lots of choices.
Lots of choice. You pick a number. Go ahead.
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't know.
Well, it's your choice. It's lady's choice.
Okay, I am curious about this prehistoric bird.
Ah, all right. Let's go to Howie in Kingston. Howie, what do you have?
Hey, Ray and Julie, thank you so much for taking my call. I got a two-parter for you, okay?
Okay.
The first part is there any evidence where prehistoric birds like Titanus were hunting humans? And B, is there any theories where they mimicked our voices to help lure us out to hunt us?
Wow, that's some deep thoughts there, buddy boy. All right, so what do you think, Julie?
It's pretty out of my wheelhouse, but...
Were humans even around when that bird was around?
I don't know exactly.
Okay.
That's part of my problem, too. I mean, I know that, you know, like, for example, like moas, which are now extinct, they were on New Zealand, and they were these huge birds, like bigger than an emu, and they were very dangerous to
Did
humans.
Did they fly?
No.
No.
No, they couldn't fly, but they were terrestrial, but they were very dangerous to humans. So I would extrapolate from that and assume that, yes, if anywhere where there were some really large birds like that, which prehistorically a lot of these birds were, like, way bigger than they are now, that they would have been a threat to humans.
Yikes.
But I have absolutely no idea on if they made sounds to fool us and trick us.
Howie, how did you come up with this and why?
Well, I mean, I'm a dinosaur lover, you know? I mean, so evolution of dinosaurs turned into birds. And so, I mean, meat eaters, one thing led to another. You know?
That is so interesting.
If nobody's actually thinking about it, I mean, is there a chance I can write a thesis paper on this?
Go for it, man. Yeah.
I mean, have you Googled it to see? Like, I mean, to see if there's anything?
I haven't.
Not yet.
But it doesn't mean that there isn't, you know?
Right, then that's true. Yeah, I would maybe contact somebody who actually studies that. You know, that's a specialty that I don't I don't have that.
Hey, Howie, by the way, our judges are saying you're now in the running for the call of the year on the Burden Show. So, well played.
That's awesome.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
800-348-2551. Okay, so I'm going to record some bird calls in my backyard, and I'm going to put them in my audio software. And I'm going to slow them down, and let's see what they sound like.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
This is going to be creepy.
We'll freak Howie out on the next show, maybe, all right? let's see. All right, what's your number there? Go ahead.
Oh, God. Who's been waiting the longest? Let's go to Merle.
Oh, boy. It's Merle time in Argyle. Hello, Merle.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Hey. This is another one of those. I heard it on NPR, so it must be...
Cut it out. All right, go ahead.
It was a black vulture, I'm assuming southern part of the country, and a pruning another species.
Yes.
I think similar in size, but the word, I can't remember what she said, but... it started with a C, and it's only
Caracara.
In the southern.
Caracara.
State. Caracara.
Have you heard it? Huh?
Yeah, I think you're talking about a Caracara.
Caracara, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah,
you have black, heard of that.
Yes, I have. Black vultures are very unique in that they not only will preen other black vultures, not just their mates, but also family members or other members of the same group.
Yeah.
But they have also been observed preening caracaras, which is a raptor down in South America.
Is this very unusual, or is it just these two species?
I would say it's very unusual.
Yeah.
I don't really know of.
Oh, okay.
Usually, it's called allopreening, meaning that they're preening their mate. So it's like a sign of that they're a nice pair,
uh-huh.
a pair bond, and they've got a strong relationship, and they're kind of helping each other out, right? Removing parasites from their mate. But for it to be going to a whole nother species is pretty remarkable. It is known to occur in black vultures.
Interesting,
so
Merle.
It's
thanks
very
for
cool.
That. I mean, maybe the okay. So what can we surmise then? Are they A, very altruistic?
Gregarious.
Or B, are they just incredibly dumb and just don't realize this aren't also vultures? No?
They must know that it's not a vulture.
So what does this tell us?
I think they're just, I don't know. I don't know. I can't get in the mind of a bird.
Do you think the vultures are entrepreneurial and it's a service industry?
I mean, I would assume that they're getting some benefit because they're reducing the parasite load within their roosting community.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually like on the roosting grounds, the wintering grounds when they're roosting in these big groups, mixed species groups. I think that's when it happens the most. And I assume it's just, it's helping everyone if they can get rid of all the ticks and everything else.
I mean, Merle's gone, but I'd love to know what show that was on. He must listen at odd hours.
I think I saw it also on Facebook. It was going around recently, too, or somewhere. But I had read about that.
It's so interesting.
For my own work, for my job, my day job, right? So, it's pretty cool.
Julie Hart is here. It's birds. Let's grab one more call before the next break, and then we'll check the email bag. 800-348-2551. It's Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, hello. Hi, Ray. Hi, Julie.
Hey.
I have three really quick and very recent sightings to share. You pick the one you want me to give more details on.
Okay.
Two hawk stories. Hawk one is the hawk, the cat, and the woman. Hawk two is juvenile hawk makes a successful food foray and becomes stunned by their own success. And geese. We had a huge number of skeins of geese flying overhead, and just yesterday I saw two clearly drone-shaped, interesting, like, color things up and down all around, tracking one of the largers of the skeins. Which one do you want me to talk about more?
Well, the introduction was so long, we only have 1 minute, so which one do you want, Julie?
I love you.
The drone? I'm curious about the drone, I guess.
Okay, let's do the drone.
Although
I'm
not sure I'll know anything to say, but...
Right, it was very interesting. I saw lots of skeins. I hear them coming, and then I look up and find where they are. And I realized that geese don't come in the ultraviolet blue and sharp reds and sharp oranges, and I could actually see the four-legged shape of one of the drones. And they clearly were going up and down with the height of the skein of geese flying overhead.
Uh-huh.
And when the geese finally went further on, I actually was able to see the drones for a minute, around 20 seconds or so, before they went too high, and I couldn't see them anymore.
Wow, you sure they were?
I do not think it was alien spaceships.
Okay.
No way. No.
How did you know where I was going there? Okay. All right, so we have 30 seconds left here before the break. Julie Hart, what do you think? Is it common for drones? I mean, somebody was probably getting pictures of the geese, right?
Maybe.
They had to be.
I guess.
That can't be safe for the geese, though, right? There's got to be. Is there a rule against that?
I've noticed a lot of birds, a lot of different species, really don't like drones because they get too close. It's buzzing. They don't know what it is. They think it's a threat. And they all get upset or fly off and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. My first thoughts were actually like maybe someone's doing research or something.
That's
I don't know. Mm-hmm, but Or it could have just been someone just trying to get a cool shot.
They kept their distance. They did.
Okay.
They kept their distance from the skein.
Very interesting.
Very weird.
That was in Schenectady,
I've never seen that.
All right.
Oh, right above.
Well, Joan, thank you very much. We're overdue for a break, but appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Oh, this is nice. This government mule doing a Wayne Shorter. Ah, Tom Thumb. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Julie Hart and birds. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get back to the phone shortly, but let's do a lightning round. You ready?
Right.
We have so many emails. This one's from Matt. Is there actually such a thing as a squirrel-proof bird feeder?
Squirrel-proof? I mean... I don't know if that's possible, but there are some methods that are very good.
Can you quickly describe one?
Yes. What I do is I have everything on a shepherd's hook in the middle of the yard, far away from any other building structures, trees, whatever. And then there's a big baffle underneath that's high up enough that the squirrels can't jump onto it. On top of it, and they can't get up through it, and so they can't get to the feeders.
Squirrels are annoying. Rick writes in, my Merlin app is very busy today. Russ writes in, anything I could do to deter grackles from nesting in arborvitaes surrounding my pool? They dump their juvenile feces sacks in my pool.
Yeah,
well, thanks for that, Russ.
They are very messy. I don't think you could deter them. Legally.
Okay. All right. That's good qualification. Vincent writes in, owl decoys. Oh, solution for house damage is the subject heading. Owl decoys. I had woodpeckers tapping on my siding. Then I put owl decoys around and they all disappeared.
I think that can work temporarily.
But
a lot of times they learn, and the same thing with shiny things, the same thing with noises. They tend to learn if it doesn't change up enough.
I think if you're really rich, I have a great idea for this. You have a bird that is basically an AI moving, limited motion.
Yeah.
And it's an owl, and it just moves a little bit, and it reacts to other birds.
If it could, like, flap wings occasionally or something, that would be good. Yeah.
I'm sure Elon Musk is working on this as we speak. this question is from Jill in Mountainville. I have a couple questions. Will blueberries eat dried mealworms?
Bluebirds.
Oh, bluebirds. They're not blueberries. That'd be strange.
Yes, they love mealworms, alive or dead.
Will it help the birds this spring if I add calcium to their seeds?
It can. You know, some people will just use, like, their eggshells. You dry them out and crack them up. And, a lot of the females especially are limited by calcium, and they need that in order to lay eggs.
Okay, and Jill says, my feed store sells crushed oyster shells for chickens.
Yeah, that works too.
All right, Susanna in Bern. We used to have flocks of cedar waxwings in the Helderbergs. Our property has woods, open fields, pond, marsh, tons of berries. Last couple of years, there were no waxwings. Any idea what happened?
They're just really random in terms of where they go. They're still in flocks. They're still around. I've seen them. I promise they're around, but they just are going somewhere else. And
so the
just...
e-bird thing might help, right? Because you could see where they are?
Yeah, you can do that too. Yeah.
All right, Mark in Greenwich, New York. I have several birdhouses on a pole in my yard. I can't find a best time to paint them. Always birds living in them. Any suggestion?
Probably right now is a good time. I would just take them down right now and paint them.
What
keep them in your garage.
People living there, though. What happens? I mean, birds living there.
If there shouldn't be anyone in there right now.
Okay.
Well, maybe. I mean, there could be some early bluebirds or house sparrows or something,
from Chris in Cornwall, and then we'll jump back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Birdcast. I've been following Birdcast since it started up again March 1st. Mm. On that day, 100 birds flew over Orange County. Last night, Birdcast counted over 140,000. Spring has sprung.
Yes.
That sounds like a cool website.
It's very cool. Yeah. And it will tell you, like, what species you should probably see. Like, you know, like, phoebes are coming back, and you can watch and see, like, oh, we had a lot of birds fly over Albany County last night, and probably there were a bunch of phoebes. And you go out, and sure enough, there's phoebes everywhere. So it's going to happen any day this week, probably.
All right, let's go to Jerry in Saugerties. Jerry, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to let you know two things.
Okay.
One, the bear are definitely out in my area because they have been around, and there's plenty of evidence of their being there in my lawn.
Okay.
But other than that, I want to tell you I've got grouse, rough grouse, have decided to come to my place, and I throw out some bird seed in the morning, and they come, like, within 2 feet of my feet. They're so cute.
Yeah,
so
nice.
Cool.
Nice. It does happen.
It's so beautiful.
That does happen.
Yeah.
I think it's great. You're lucky.
And I call them and I go like that, and they come right away.
Oh, wow.
Great.
Oh,
so
that's amazing.
I just wanted to let you know.
Turkeys
no
as well?
No questions involved.
Well, yeah. Jerry, thanks for that one. That's cool. So what sort of, Julie, habitat do they – is it weeds and things like that?
Grouse?
Yeah.
They need like a – a forest, like an old growth. Not necessarily old growth.
So it's not a meadow or anything like that.
There needs to be fallen trees. There needs to be good cover. They're usually in the middle of the woods. But if you're living in a remote place and surrounded by forest, I have seen them do that where they get very tame and they will come in and
Cool.
I know, right?
All right, let's go to our friend Kathy in Clintondale. Kathy, you're on with Julie Hart.
Hi, I had a great time with the birds this winter. I would go out my front door, and this one bird would come flying at me and chirping away, and it occurred to me that with all that snow on the ground, maybe they needed some bird seed.
Mm.
So I got some bird seed, and I established a restaurant outside my bedroom window. I would take a paper plate, put the bird seed on it, and carefully drop it onto the snow. And I had everybody coming to eat. It was just wonderful. I'd have the cardinals and the wrens and the nuthatches and everybody.
Nice.
I called it my IHOP restaurant.
Your IHOP.
It was just great. Every time it would snow, I'd have to put another paper plate with some more bird seed. Now, are those seeds going to grow now that all the snow is gone and it's wet out there?
Sometimes I do get some small sunflowers start to grow in my grass, yes, from the fallen seed. So, yes, it can happen. Most of them won't. They'll be, well, the seed is most likely eaten, for one. And then if it's not, then it might have gotten destroyed just by being soggy and wet and mildewy and stuff. But, no, it can happen. Can happen, yeah. I will say,
but we had fun with the IHOP restaurant, and I called it IHOP because they would hop up on this little bush there.
Go ahead, Julie.
Nice.
Anyway,
I can put out like a general announcement too that it is a good idea to clean the fallen seed from the ground, right? So you can use a rake. You can, you know, there are different types of feeders that will collect some of that debris. What we do is use a wet dry vac, and we actually just have an extension cord, and we go out and we suck up all those seeds, and then
so you vacuum your lawn.
We vacuum the lawn.
That's dedication.
So that is, you know, but it's helpful to keep like the rodents down. So,
well, Kathy, that was great. Yeah. Thanks for that one. 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart. We'll go to Beckett, Massachusetts, and it's Ken. Ken, you're up.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. So I have a question. I had this experience where it was a couple of weeks ago in the midst of the super cold weather with the snow, and I get up in the morning, and all of a sudden, this bird is behind me on the window. My wife goes, look at that bird. Look at that bird. It's trying to get your attention. And I missed it. But then I go downstairs and I go to the kitchen window and I'm filling the coffee maker. And this bird comes to the window and tries to get my attention. And I'm like, that's so weird, you know. But 2 days go by and I get up in the morning. Same bird, a tufted titmouse, comes to the window, tries to get my attention. Then I go down to make the coffee. It comes to the window again. And I said, wow, maybe with the cold and the snow, because we don't feed the birds, maybe they're hungry.
Yeah.
Like the previous caller said. So I was like, wow. So we got some seed and I made a feeder and we put it out. Sure enough, it was very busy. But like a week later, I see my nearest neighbor. We live way up in the middle of nowhere. And I see my nearest neighbor, and she says, oh, you know, we were away for a week, and we weren't feeding the birds.
Oh, wow.
Do they come and get you? Do they come and, like, try to get people to feed them?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I feel like I'm often anthropomorphizing these birds, but I have the same experience in my yard where, you know, and if like the feeders run out, then they start coming up to the windows and they'll even like peck at the windows and they're like looking in. And if you are like are gone for a few hours and you drive in the driveway and get out of the car, they like all of them come flying in and they're like calling and they're just like, where's our food? Where's our food? I think that is what they were doing. They were like, we are hungry. We need food. Where's the food? I see there's a person here. Give me food.
Ken, that was awesome. 800-348-2551 is our number. Rinky writes in, Rinky from Western Mass. I lost two broods of bluebirds to a bear last summer. The very sturdy pole was bent.
Wow.
The box opened. The little ones were gone. I may try hanging a box this year.
Oh, wow. I mean, that was to your question where you asked if the bears will go after
the
birdhouses. So, wow. Okay. I haven't heard that.
Maybe it was a Bigfoot or
thanks
something.
Thanks for correcting.
You know?
That's insane.
All right, Rinky, thanks for that one. And thanks for that name. It's very cool. Liz in Otis, Massachusetts. Liz, you're on.
Hi. Last summer, we had a family, I think it was a family of red-tailed hawks. It just wiped out every robin's nest. The babies would get to be a certain age, and they would just clear them right out. Mm. And this winter, I put up feeders and got absolutely not one bird, except one little Carolina wren who came every day, who comes every day, twice a day. And I'm wondering, and I don't hear the red tails at all. Last summer, you could hear them. And when they started squawking and the other birds started squawking, I'd go out and try and protect the robin's nest, but it didn't work. And I'm wondering if, I mean, there are birds around, and there's pretty good coverage around the feeders, but nobody would come. Only the Carolina wren.
Wow. Yeah, so you said there is coverage, but is the coverage, like, I don't know,
it's
3 feet away, it's 5 feet away, 6 feet away?
Yeah, probably, you don't want it to probably be 3 feet away.
Okay, that may be too close, actually. So they need to, it's funny, they need coverage so that they can hide quickly if a predator does come in.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't want it to be too close because there could be a predator hiding in that bush or whatever that they don't see. And if it's too close, then they're putting themselves at risk as well. So it needs to be like the right distance. And so you may want to try moving it around.
What'd you say, Liz?
A squirrel.
The squirrels came.
Yeah. The squirrels and the Carolina wren.
The Carolina wren. And he had real interesting behavior. He like digs into the snow. He digs holes in the snow and like tunnels in the snow.
Getting the fallen seeds.
So if there's buried seed, he digs holes right in the snow and gets the seed.
Yeah.
Real interesting little bird, but that's the only bird that comes to the feeder.
Wait, the bird? The bird goes into the snow?
That's what she's saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Have you heard about that, Julie?
He burrows into the snow.
I haven't seen.
And he also doesn't go to the feeder. He only ground feeds. He won't go up to the feeder.
Yeah, it seems like they've figured out that the feeder is dangerous.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like. So I would try moving that feeder, if you can, moving it a little further away from the bushes, but not too far. I think if you go on to Project Feeder Watch.
Project Feeder Watch.
Yeah, so Project Feeder Watch is a program that also by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Okay.
And that happens all winter, but they have, and it's a citizen science program. You can watch your feeders and submit all kinds of observations to them. But they also have a lot of information about how to place feeders, what seed to use, what types of feeders to have, like that kind of thing. And so you may want to just check and see if your feeders are matching that.
Okay.
Those instructions. Yeah.
Julie Hart's our guest today. It's birds. We're almost done here. Last one for the day is from Knox, and it's Jay. Jay, go ahead.
Hi. We have chickens on our farm, and I've been hesitating to put the bird feeders back up ever since avian flu came around. Am I running a risk if I start feeding the critters again, or is it okay to do in this area of the country?
I believe
I'm sorry,
that the birds.
Yo, yeah, we heard you, Jay. She's thinking.
I'm thinking. Sorry.
I just realized I had my phone upside down.
Okay. I believe bird flu is still a problem, and I think it's still going around. So I would hold off because it can pass from the wild birds to your chickens and vice versa.
Yeah.
If you just have one or the other, then it's usually deemed to be safe. But if you've got both, then you're running a risk still.
All right, Jay.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Appreciate the call very much. All right, Julie, we mentioned several websites today.
Yes.
And so let's recap those here at the end of the show.
Okay, so we've got eBird.
Okay, that's e-bird.
Nope, no dash, just
ebird.org.
.org.
Okay, that's one.
That's one. Birdcast.
Birdcast.org. One word?
One word.
Okay.
Birdcast.org.
All right.
There's Project Feeder Watch we talked about, which I don't know offhand what the URL is, but
you
if you
search.
Google it, you'll find it.
Yeah.
Coming up soon is also Nest Watch, which is another Cornell Lab program that's for the summer, and you watch any bird boxes that you have, right?
They're pretty busy over there.
There's there's a lot of citizen science projects for birds.
Well, so. Julie Hart, thank you for being on the show. We'll see you next month.
Thank you. Yep.
Support comes from the New York State CDFI Coalition, presenting Roots and Reckoning, a conversation on the future of community finance, March 23rd at 6 p.m. in Albany, nyscdfi.org. Waymo, working to build a future of safe, accessible transportation through autonomous vehicle technology designed to expand options for people unable to drive. More at Waymo.com. And WAMC underwriters, businesses and organizations that have made vital contributions to support the mission of WAMC. More on partnerships at WAMCunderwriting.org. Well, once again, thanks to Julie Hart. A splendid time we had here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. We got through all of them today, which is extremely rare. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the Writers Forum. We'll see you, too.